The 17th century English philosopher and poet John Donne once wrote, "No man is an island unto himself." The fundamental idea of that statement, of course, is that no man functions properly, completely on his own. All people need other people. God put Adam to sleep and created woman because he said it was not good for the man to be alone. Both men and women have continued to be puzzled at the arrangement ever since. Yet no one can deny that man is a social creature. Let me see, I guess I've got to start it now. Okay. It's literally impossible for us to live lives separate and apart from each other, especially in the day and time in which we live. Since all people have to deal with making and maintaining relationships with others, what rule do we use in accomplishing this? And it's obvious that we're not doing such a good job of it. Somebody has observed that we're all down here on this rock just trying to keep from killing each other. And I'm not so sure in some cases that that's not a bad summary. How do we go about getting along? Philosophers, religions, psychologists, and others have dealt with these issues in various ways for centuries. Yet 16 centuries before John Donne, Jesus Christ gave the ultimate statement in terms of human relation principles. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, he said, "Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." This maxim has become known as the Golden Rule. Of course, many can quote the statement who have no desire, no intention of trying to live up to what it teaches, and many of us with good intentions can quote it. Perhaps, however, we find ourselves maybe thinking little about what it truly means and what it truly requires of us. Just think about it. Do you always treat other people the way that you want to be treated? I'm afraid we must face the harsh reality that sometimes we're guilty of not doing that. But as citizens of Christ's kingdom, we must seek to live our lives according to this truth. Much has been said by various commentators and scholars of the fact that the Golden Rule is found in similar form elsewhere. For example, Confucius is credited with having said, "Do not to others..." It's only supposed to come up one at a time. So I get a whole screen when I push a button. Okay. Confucius is credited with having said, "Do not to others what you would not wish done to yourselves." The Stoics had an almost exact identical axiom or precept. Also in the Old Testament Apocrypha, don't try to turn there. Hopefully you don't have one of those in your Bible, but Tobit chapter 4 and verse 15 says, "Do not do to anyone what you yourself would hate." Seems that this is what the famous Rabbi Hillel, who was the grandfather of Gamaliel, seems that this is what he quoted in 20 BC when he was asked by a would-be proselyte to teach him the whole law while he was standing on one leg. His rival, Rabbi Shemaiah, had been unable or unwilling to answer the young man, and he had driven the inquirer away, but Rabbi Hillel said, "What is hateful to you, do not do to anyone else. This is the whole law. All the rest is only commentary." That's recorded in the Talmud, Shabbat 31a. Some may be bothered, therefore, by thinking that the Golden Rule did not really originate with Christ. For example, Confucius lived something like 550 to 480 BC. His teachings were actually not written down until about 150 years later by his disciples. Stoics existed around 300 BC. The Book of Tobit was written between 201 70 BC by a Jew in Egypt. Rabbi Hillel lived around 60 BC to 20 AD, and of course all these predate Christ. But when you think about it, are any of these statements really that similar to what Jesus said? Are they really that close to the golden rule? Do not to others what you would not wish done to yourself. Confucius, do not do to anyone what you yourself would hate. What is hateful to you, do not do to anyone else. Rabbi Hillel. And then what Jesus said was, treat others as you want them to treat you. I submit to you there's as much difference between these statements in Matthew 7:12 as there is between saying, don't hurt that little elderly lady, or go help that little elderly lady. Or in saying, don't be mean to your sister, compared with saying, be nice to your sister. The first merely requires that you hold yourself in check, that you refrain from treating others badly, that you squelch your desires to bring harm to or to mistreat or to offend other people. The latter, the golden rule, demands that you actually improve your behavior. It demands that you actively do good to others. There's daylight and difference between the previous teachings and the golden rule. That's why I believe people call it the golden rule. And that's why Jesus said, this is the law and the prophets. The contemporary English version says, this is what the law and the prophets are all about. Man has the tendency to want to get the externals right without fixing the internals. Very common problem. It's a lot easier to do the things that you're supposed to do than it is to really repent, change the heart, change your life from the inside. Washing the outside of the cup and leaving the inside unclean has been something that mankind has been guilty of doing for millennia. Pharisee in Luke chapter 18 would represent that quite well. Gave the list of what he did, what he didn't do, who he wasn't like. We can't treat other people right and work together well if we're not right in our relationship with our Father in heaven. Being right doctrinally, practicing the right things religiously, are of no eternal benefit if we treat our brothers and sisters and our fellow man in ways that we would not want to be treated. I want to read from four different translations just to get the text in our minds. Do to others what you want them to do to you, the New Century Version. In everything, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, New American Standard Bible. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, the New King James Version. And the contemporary English version, treat others as you want them to treat you. Well, the obvious question then that follows is, how do I want to be treated? Some answers would obviously include, I want to be treated with respect, with forgiveness, with mercy, with fairness, appreciation, kindness, compassion, understanding. And so now you might ask, how should you treat others? The teaching is really quite profound above all explanations. If it were universally understood, if it were universally practiced, there would be no need of stating other principles of human relations. If everybody treated everybody else exactly the way they want to be treated, just think about the profound impact that would have. This would completely destroy greed, jealousy, envy, hatred, slander, backbiting, unkindness, malice, abuse, adultery, murder, theft, and you could just keep the list going. However, another important thing that we must realize is that only a righteous person is truly capable of practicing this principle. Think about it. First, one who is not righteous will want things for himself that many others would not want. You could think of, say, lust over certain things, certain addictions, behaviors, desire for alcohol, unfair gain, prominence. How can you desire to have an unfair gain over somebody else? And that's what they're wanting to, it doesn't work. Second, only one who is righteous will care enough for others and little enough for himself that he will be able or even desirous of practicing this rule. Third, only one who is righteous will want things for himself that would also be good for everybody else. Positive things that all people should receive. For example, fairness instead of advantage. Other similar things. I'd like to suggest three practical ways that we can, that we must apply the golden rule to ourselves. First, we need to be interested in the welfare of others. In his little bestseller, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie once wrote, "You can make more friends in 2 months by being interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get them interested in you." Of course, the motive of the Christian is to please God and to influence others and be a proper reflection of Christ, not just to win friends and influence people as an end in itself, but when we learn to apply this principle at how we look at others, we'll be happier people. That is, we'll be less selfish. We'll have more influence, obviously, on leading others to Christ as well. Do we take interest, for example, only in those who share similar interests with us? You think about Jesus and the people with whom he, on various occasions, spent time with. The Samaritan woman at the well. I just kind of doubt that they had a lot of similar interests. And think about the sinners with whom he ate, the tax collectors and the other just identified broadly as sinful people. He took an interest in them because he loved them, because he cared about their soul. Christ has not called us to do what we feel like doing. He's called us to do what is right. The Son of God himself said, "I came not to be served, but to serve." Matthew 20 and verse 28. This is being interested in the welfare of others, to be a servant. I'm convinced that this is clearly a part of the teaching of the golden rule. The Apostle Paul said, let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4. Some say, well, it's our job to teach people the truth. Well, I would agree with that. But somebody made the statement a number of years ago that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. We need to apply the golden rule to ourselves in seeking to build others up. Christ-like thinking looks for the good in others and praises it. You know, it's quite easy to be negative and critical. You ever find it very difficult? You struggle with trying to be negative and critical, or you find that kind of easy to do? I'm sure we've all heard the statement, if you can't say anything good about others, don't say anything at all. I don't know if you're familiar with the great philosopher Grumpy Cat. Anybody here familiar with Grumpy Cat, who's become a phenomenon of sorts? He says, if you don't have anything good to say about others, come and sit with me. We'll make fun of them together. And, of course, there are a lot of people who feel that way, a lot of people who think that way, and it should certainly not be us. I understand that there are times for strong language. I understand that there are times for action when it comes to dealing with sin in the lives of other Christians. The Bible gives us several examples of that. Some Christians, however, feel that they must preserve harmony at any cost, so they do everything possible to reduce friction. They should remember that there's no friction in a machine that's been shut down for the night, but it also doesn't produce anything. Turn it off and you're not going to have any problem with moving parts. Also remember that there's a human society where there are no problems among people. That's what you're looking for. We call it a graveyard. or cemetery. The dead have no differences of opinion. They cause no friction with one another because they have no energy, they have no motion. There's also complete lack of any kind of achievement. Problems are the price of progress. Friction is the result of motion. A live and expanding church will have certain amount of difficulties as a result of its life and activity. That's not to be fought against at any cost. Paul said, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others or favorably regard others better than himself. It is that kind of attitude that Paul said in Ephesians 4:16 that causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Man's tendency is typically to exalt himself and to put other people down, but the golden rule demands otherwise. We need to understand that these are not just some arbitrary rules that we should follow. These are things that will fundamentally change our character. These are things that will help to transform us into the very image of Christ. Last, we need to apply the golden rule to ourselves in learning to think well of others. Do we apply this teaching, treat others as we want to be treated, toward members of our immediate family, husband, wife, children, parents? Ephesians chapter 5, 22, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 4, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Is there honor and respect in these relationships? Or is there constant criticism, fault-finding, nagging? Psychologists have concluded that we must have five positives to counter the effect of one negative. Let's let that sink in a little bit. It takes five positives to counter the effect of one negative. Understand that we're talking about a relationship here in some of these situations, the ones we're discussing right now, day in and day out. Husband, wife, children. Some use criticism by others as an excuse to do no better. Well, they just beat me down all the time, and therefore I'm kind of freed of any responsibility to try anyway. There's no justification in that, but neither is anybody justified for being a constant critic. Love accepts imperfections. Peter said in 1 Peter 4, verse 8, love covers a multitude of sins. Proverb writer said in 19:11, it is to his glory to pass over a transgression and seek love. New International Version translates that it is to one's glory to overlook an offense. Not talking about excusing sin, but we need to look for the best in others. And we need to seek to build one another up. To see how critical you may have become, try going on a 24-hour criticism fast. What that means is any time that you utter one criticism about anyone, you have to start all over. Now you've got another 24 hours. You do it again, you have to start the clock over again. Nurtured mental criticisms count too. See how many times you have to start over before you can go an entire 24-hour period without making one critical remark or nurturing one critical thought. And if you really want to make it interesting, write down how many times that you would have said or dwelt on something, but you stopped yourself from doing so. How do we actually think toward our neighbors, toward our co-workers, toward our friends? Do we treat them with kindness and respect even when we feel they don't deserve it? Now notice that. Even when we feel they don't deserve it, you know, that's the fundamental definition of grace. Undeserved favor. It's what Jesus requires of citizens of the kingdom. Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 and following, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those, I think the idea is if you love only those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even tax collectors do so? We're called to a higher standard than just doing what we feel like doing, saying what we feel like saying, but we feel so justified. We're so right in treating people badly because of what they've done or what they said or they should have known better, or the list could go on endlessly. This teaching that we just read from Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount goes in perfect harmony with the Golden Rule. Don't we like to be treated with kindness and respect even when we don't deserve it? You ever fuss at somebody because they made a mistake? You ever made a mistake and have somebody give you a hard time? Did you like that? If we don't like that, then we shouldn't treat other people that way. That's how simple that this is. Through the years, as occasionally I feel that I have been treated unfairly, and I word that intentionally that way, because anybody ever felt like when they were treated badly that you weren't treated unfairly? You ever have a conflict with people, two people, and both of them think they're wrong? Usually it doesn't work that way, does it? They both think they're right. That's why they have the conflict. So nonetheless, as through the decades, I've occasionally felt like I've been treated unfairly. I've marveled from time to time as I've thought of how after 3 years of Christ's apostles being in close company with him and Judas Iscariot, when Jesus announced that one was going to betray him that evening of the betrayal, not a single person had a clue who it was. I find that quite marvelous. Not even one of them suspected Judas. Can you imagine that? If you had somebody at work or in some kind of relationship in the family or something that maybe for 3 years, put it in a work situation or school situation or something, and for 3 years you've known this person was trying to destroy you, maybe backbiting, doing bad things, and you knew that they had it out for you, did nobody at all that knew you knew anything about that? That's what we're looking at here. Matthew chapter 26, verses 20 through 22. When evening had come, he sat down with the 12. As they were eating, he said, "Assuredly I say to you, one of you will betray me." And they all looked and said, "It's Judas. I see how you've been acting toward him, Lord. I know the looks you've been giving and the kind of little hints you've made and the little sarcastic say." None of that. They were exceedingly sorrowful, and believe this, each of them began to say to him, "Lord, is it I? Am I the one?" That's astonishing too. If they were the one and Jesus knew this and they knew that he knew it, he hadn't given any indication to them. And they're thinking, is it possibly me? You've not indicated in 3 years anything that would suggest that. Just completely clueless. What an amazing thing. When we feel someone is out to get us, it's quite difficult for us not to let that show. Facial expressions, various forms of nonverbal communication, little comments, something. How do we think toward... I don't know where I'm supposed to be on this. I'm sorry. Because I usually do it step by step as it goes. But there I am. How do we think toward our brothers and sisters in Christ? You know, our thinking can become distorted and cynical if we're not careful. And again, I understand that we must correct sin. We must correct egregious behavior in the body. But there's an old Italian proverb that says, "He that will have none but a perfect brother must resign himself to remain forever brotherless." However earnestly we desire our brothers and our sisters to just kind of grow up and push on to perfection and kind of get on with it, we've got to learn to accept them as they are and get along with one another. And again, I'm not talking about sinful behavior. I'm not talking about offensive behavior. To treat an imperfect brother impatiently is to advertise my own imperfections. Paul said, the Hebrew writer said, "Let brotherly love continue." Romans 12:10, "Be kindly affectioned to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another." There are a lot of ways this topic could have been approached, and I certainly would not suggest that this was the best way. But I will suggest that if we don't get this issue right regarding how we treat others, there won't be any working together in the church community. There won't be any living lives that are pleasing to God. We need each other. And we need to learn to love one another. And we need to learn to work together with one another. Some people have concluded that it's just not worth all the friction. I've known of situations like that. Maybe you have too. I know of a preacher and his wife who just stopped worshiping with anybody. Knew an elderly lady, I think in her 80s, who wouldn't go to worship because things either didn't suit her, she couldn't get along with certain people, just constantly struggling with attitudes, and they ought to straighten up, and this ought to be fixed, and that ought to be done. And so they decide to just go it alone. We need to remember the banana. When it got separated from the bunch, it got skinned. The golden rule does not call us to just bring no harm to others. It calls us to actively do good to others. Again, Matthew chapter 5, verses 44 and 45, "I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes the sun rise on the evil and the good, sends rain on the just and on the unjust." The golden rule calls us to be interested in others. It calls us to build up others. It calls us to think the best of others. It calls us to treat others as we would like to be treated. May we all strive harder to live our lives according to this beautiful teaching from God, that we may all become truly sons of our Father who is in heaven. Thank you.